This is WHTC in Holland. Time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number, 395-1450. Our guest this morning is our representative, Joe Hobman. And good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Juke. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you once again. And got some things to talk about on this beautiful day. Everybody would like to be out gardening.
You bet.
All right. Let's talk about the budget, shall we?
Hey,
state budget.
You bet. The budget is done again.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Oh, it's a load off my mind.
Yeah.
April and May especially are just tremendously busy trying to figure out what we can do, what we can't do, putting out fires from individual budgets and individual people that want something or want to make sure that something isn't in the budget. But it came together on the last week of our session, and we voted it out on June 12th. It's nice to have it behind us. So that budget actually takes place or takes effect October 1.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've done in the past 3 years, we had it done three and a half months early. And that was one of the biggest changes that we had in the Snyder administration is we didn't wait until the end of September to do the budget. We had it done early so schools could know what they have to budget for the next five.
That started with his administration, didn't it?
It sure did. You bet. And he wanted it done by July 1. That was his challenge to us, and we upped the ante and had it done by June 1 the past 3 years and by June 12 this year. And we're very proud of that record, and we're very proud to have it done and balanced, and we actually have more money in the coffers than we ever did before. That's because people are back to work, and the economy is just healthier.
Mm-hmm. And people are going to say, well, now that we have all that money in the coffers, why do we need more taxes?
Well, we don't have enough for the needs we have on our roads, and I'm sure that's where the calls will go. But we've been doing a whole lot of things that were ignored for the past 8 years or 10 years prior to the Snyder administration. And as I've used the analogy of deferred maintenance, we're making up for those things now.
Okay, and I got a call here.
Good.
Good morning. You're on the line with our guests.
They were talking about taking the property tax exemption off. Did that go through, or is that coming?
Well, thank you for that question. I'm glad you asked it. We were going to raise that. The property tax exemption?
Well, the personal property.
Oh, personal property. Good. Yes, that's what I thought. That will actually be Proposal 1 on your August ballot.
Okay.
You'll have to vote for that. And,
okay.
You know, we have universal support for it on both sides of the aisle. There's no organized opposition to it. I haven't heard of any opposition.
Yeah, that's personal property. What I'm talking about is the tax that we pay, like, to the school and the city. They want to take that away. Because we get a deduction or income tax. Is that part going to be taken away?
No, I don't believe we're changing anything on
that. Not changing that?
No.
I don't know if you can comment on this, but why are you in favor of... the woman that's running for your place. So hang up and listen.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Jump
right into that, too. I'm strongly supporting Daniela Garcia because I believe she and Juke and I were just talking before we went on the air. She not only has the best experience for the job, but even more importantly, I think she has the best temperament, somebody who can go there and get things done, not just fight, not just rally against either your own party or the other party and be negative. But in the spirit of Rick Snyder, certainly just look for solutions. And what I love about Snyder is that he says, let's not assess blame, let's not take credit, let's find a problem and fix it and move on. He looks at it from a very business-friendly approach, saying it's our job to manage the state, fix our problems, and then move on to the next problem. And, of course, we do have our disagreements, we have our fights occasionally, but he keeps them so professional. And I see Daniela in that same light of not picking fights, not making friends and making enemies, but just looking at it from a very independent point of view and saying, what's best for the citizens of Michigan? I think she has that skill set. I think she certainly has that experience coming out of Pete Hoekstra's office. And with so much focus being on health care these days and the changes in health care, nobody's going to be able to hit the ground running better than her. So that's why I'm supporting Daniela Garcia to replace me.
Okay. All right. Now let's talk a little bit about Proposal 1.
Okay. Proposal 1 is a phase out of the personal property tax. And for those that have ever had a small business or a large business or worked in a business in their accounting department, you know what the personal property tax is, where local governments come in and they tax your equipment. Really, personal property tax doesn't really do it justice because it sounds like something we're paying at our homes. But it's a business tax on the equipment within a business. And as I look around the studio here, I see computers and TVs and chairs and desks, and all that is taxed by your local unit of government. Well, if you put that into manufacturing and into commercial, it's a disincentive for people to improve their business. And my family grew up in a small business that's still around today, and they still pay that. Well, if you go out and buy a new truck for your business, if you go out and buy a new computer, all of a sudden your taxes go up. And we want to create an incentive for businesses to improve and to upgrade, create more economic activity, not a disincentive.
Okay, got another call coming in here. Good morning, you're on the line with Joel. Good morning, you're on the line with Joe.
Hi. Isn't it true that this tax money for personal property taxes for business actually goes to help places like the library, bouse pools, things like that, and that's why a lot of these things are cutting back, closing down?
Well, I'm not sure the two examples you gave us, if they're cutting back or closing, but...
Well, I know Herrick certainly is. They had a paper out a couple of years ago asking people to oppose it because it would affect their budget a great deal.
Well, a couple of years ago, the proposal was completely different. That was something that was going through the legislature. This is being put on the ballot for people to vote on. And it's interesting you mentioned Herrick because I was with a member of the Herrick Library board last night. And they've said their board completely supports this repeal of the PPT because they realize long-term that this is, as I said, a disincentive for businesses to thrive and grow. So, as I said, there's no organized opposition to that, and that includes the local units of government. You can throw libraries in that because it's a taxing authority. But your cities, townships, counties all support getting rid of the PPT.
But doesn't that support at this time a lot of your local agencies that I just mentioned?
Well, and that's why this is a phase-out. That's why it's done over a period of time, and it affects certain businesses differently. If smaller businesses, and I don't know the exact numbers, but small businesses it'll exempt immediately, and then it phases it out for the larger businesses. So it's not a cutoff where next year businesses or local governments are going to say, boy, all that revenue is gone. And we're confident, and those that have put this together and even those that weren't involved are saying, yes, we can grow our way to success without this tax because we're one of the only states in the union that has such a tax. So it really it has no opposition, including ARP for senior citizens support this. And they're typically an organization that doesn't look favorably on these kind of tax changes. So long term, this will be a huge benefit to Michigan. It's probably one of the most important things that I could do in my term in the legislature is to see this through.
I also have another question.
Yes.
The man who just called asked about the homestead. I think that's what he was referring to, the homestead exemption. I understood that was to be phased out also.
Boy, I apologize. I don't have an answer for that. I know we discussed it early on in the budget year, but I didn't think there were changes made to it. I could be completely wrong, and I'll try to have that clarified next time I'm on the air.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We're here with Representative Joe Havman, and if you have a question, 395-1450 is the number. And continuing a little bit with the budget, let's talk a little bit about Detroit.
Great. The package of bills was passed about two and a half weeks ago to settle the bankruptcy in Detroit, to keep it from moving forward and causing more problems for the state. Very happy with what was accomplished there, including, and really the kicker for it that convinced me was at least a 12, 13 years of oversight from an independent group to make sure that the city council and the mayor didn't fall back into old habits.
Mm-hmm.
It protects the pensioners that work for the city that now live all over the state of Michigan. It keeps them from, these are very small pensions most of the time, it keeps them from going into the welfare system, into our social safety network by protecting those pensions. And it protects the city from further litigation from its creditors. So
okay.
It allows the city to really to start over.
And I have a call here. Good. Yes. You're online with Joe.
Yes, good morning. I heard of a report, and you'll have to forgive me. It's an article, I guess it was in one of the Detroit newspapers. And what the fellow did is they studied all the Great Lakes states. And Minnesota came out being the best economically. I think he said that their average pay was $9,000 more than any of the others. Their roads are good. Their economy is the best in the Great Lakes. And they found that they increased their taxes and they increased their spending, the state did. And yet it has the healthiest economy. It seems like Michigan's gone in the other direction. And I don't know where we are as far as our economy compared to the others, but we're not doing as well as Minnesota. And I would suggest, and if I could, you know, find out the author and get the bibliographical information, that maybe I could send it to you. And it certainly would be an article worth reading.
That would be great. I've heard that statistic about Minnesota's economy several times, but I'd be very interested in reading the article. And, you know, Michigan went through a really tough time between 2000 and 2009, or excuse me, 2010, that what's called the lost decade. We cut our spending not because we wanted to, but because we did not have the money, depleted our reserves, our rainy day fund, and really disinvested because we didn't have anything. And people were leaving the state by droves. We were at an unemployment rate of about 13-14%. And what you've seen in the past 3 years is a moderate increase in our spending because we've had more revenues, and we're trying to make up for that lost decade. So I think we're on the way back. Certainly we are not there yet. Our unemployment still exceeds the national average. But if you look at the past 30, 40 years, Michigan's unemployment typically is in excess of the national average. There was only a short period during the Engler administration where we were below that average. So we're on our way back, and I've said for years, we're not out of the woods, but we are certainly improving in every way.
Okay.
I was just, excuse me.
Yes.
I was just thinking it's like the Keynesian theory for the state.
And there's a lot of people believe that. You know, there's a certain segment of people that believe government should be getting out of more things and spending less and taxing less and just let the free economy do everything. I think there's a balance. There's always a medium, a happy middle there where you have to find that sweet spot where government investment is helping the economy. Now, growing government too much, we know, is going to be detrimental as well. And I'm not a full Keynesian person either, but I believe that government has a place. It has a role in spending. I believe that should be trying to focus it primarily on infrastructure that helps everyone. And that's the direction we're trying to go right now with our roads.
We certainly need business, but as someone far, far better than I said, a government for the people, of the people, and by the people, not for business, by business, and of business. So, but you still need business.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Good morning. I was wondering about the gas tax. The money that is collected, is that spent in the right in that vicinity, or what do they do with that?
Well, a good share of our gas tax is spent on our schools and in other ways.
I can't hear you very well.
I'm sorry. A good share of our gas tax is spent in other ways, on other things. And we do dedicate a certain amount of our what we call our general fund toward transportation, and then we leverage federal funds with that match. But that's one of the debates we're having now, is how do we increase our revenue for our roads. What the state legislature put forth about a month ago and voted out, it did not get approved by the Senate, but we voted to reallocate existing resources to our our transportation system. And we had a plan to raise put an additional $485 million, I believe the number is, into transportation without raising more revenues. Now, the question of gas tax going to roads or going somewhere else, the way it currently is, a good share of it goes into our education system. So we can reallocate that money. We can rededicate that and say all gas tax must go into roads, but then we're going to have a hole somewhere else in the budget that we would have to patch. So part of what we're discussing now is how much we can reallocate from existing resources, and the debate primarily on the Senate side recently is how much more do we think people will accept in an increased revenue stream dedicated toward roads.
Well, I don't think we need any more taxes, but I think that the money that is collected in one place should stay there and do what it's supposed to do, not moving it all over the place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Time out for this word.
Hi, this is State Representative Joe Hovman. The end of my term in Lansing is quickly approaching, and it's time to select your next representative. I know the candidates for this office personally and believe that Daniela Garcia is clearly the best person to serve Ottawa County. Groups funded by out-of-state money shouldn't be influencing who you vote for. Local organizations like Ottawa County Farm Bureau, Friends of West Michigan Business, and the Lakeshore Realtors Association have all endorsed Daniela Garcia. I'm asking you to support her, too.
Paid for by Friends of Daniela Garcia.
And we're glad that you came in and did that.
to go on a break and then hear my own ad.
Yeah. That's something? All right. What else do you have, Joe, this morning on this?
We covered a lot there. I'll just mention on the budget school aid fund, we're seeing another increase in our per pupil funding.
Yeah.
In money brought back to schools. We've also on revenue sharing, but specifically on schools. Our local schools fared pretty well this year. There was an across-the-board funding increase of $50 per student, and that was for everyone. But then there was that jumped up to $175 per student for those schools that were on the lower funded scale.
Oh, yes.
And that helped everyone in this area except for the Saugatuck and Grand Haven school districts because they were already higher funded.
Yeah.
So they might have a few complaints that they didn't get as much as Holland, Zeeland, and West Ottawa and Hudsonville, but that's because they already received a higher per pupil funding. That $175 per student, hopefully will help their financial condition. What we also did that I'm very proud of is put additional money toward what we call the MIPSRs. And MIPSR stands for basically the pension fund for retired teachers and administrators. That has a tremendous debt yet on it. And we continually pick away at that. And it's important that we set money aside. We not only pay some of that pension cost for the schools. It used to be where we'd send them money per student, but they'd send us a check back. Now we're giving them that money, but we're putting it directly toward the pension, so they don't have to pay that bill. We also put over $108 million on the big debt, the big pension debt at the end. So long term, that's going to help our schools and help our children who are going to be paying that bill a decade or two down the road. So I'm very happy with what we did with that part of the school budget. There's always disagreement as to how much funding is enough for schools, and it's hard with hundreds of districts in this state to make everyone happy. It was, again, as usual, the most contentious part of the budget, but I think we reached a pretty good balance.
Good. I recall being on the school board in Saugatuck and hearing the same thing all the time. Well, you guys got lots of money to work with.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We receive somewhere around $7,200, $7,300 per student in that area here locally. The school districts that were doing the most complaining, one of them receives $11,800.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the ones complaining that they don't have enough money. So that's the problem you have trying to make everyone happy and piece
Absolutely.
Together a budget with 56 votes.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Hi.
Good morning.
Evan. This is not on the subject of the budget or anything, but I've just been wanting to talk to you about this because I support you in your efforts to try to get more work available for convicted felons.
Sure.
And I was wondering if you are aware of conditions at the Ottawa County Jail, how they do not have a yard or exercise facilities for people, and I think they're allowed to hold people up to 2 years there, and I know
Correct.
Up to one.
Yeah.
And I think this is a, you know, kind of cruel and unusual punishment because everyone needs to see the sight of the outdoors. There are no windows.
No, it was years ago that I visited the jail.
It's a nice new facility
that,
but it's certainly not set up for growth of people.
Well,
and the same thing goes for the postcards instead of letters, and they have no newspapers available. They aren't allowed to listen to newscasts or anything that can grow their mind. It's just mindless movies and so forth. And I'm just thinking, you don't go out of there any better than what you came in.
I just
wondered if you knew what the conditions were and what the rules are.
Well, it's been years since I've been through the county jail.
Well, perhaps somebody should look into the way things are done there now. It's all about money and saving of money and not for rehabilitation very much anymore. Okay, thanks.
Good, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with you a bit. And traditionally, jails don't have the level of service and rehabilitation that our prison system does. They also operate at about half the cost of our prisons. They are made for one-year sentences and up to two-year sentences maximum. When I was there, I do know they have a small room with a light at the top and ventilation at the top, and that's what they call outdoor time that, that they're required to give prisoners. I know that they are starting to change in terms of programming. And it's starting in Ottawa County, I believe. They're doing a better job. They're working hand-in-hand with groups like 70x7 to try and bring rehabilitation to the jail setting. That's a complaint that we're starting to see around the state. Now, specifically, I'm thinking of a gentleman out of one of my colleagues out of Genesee County who wants to see us get involved with the corrections department to help fund the jail in Genesee and Oakland. To add programming. That's going to be a local cost, and one of the reasons you're not seeing it at the county level is cost. It does cost more money, and we've cut tremendous cost out of our corrections department in the past 3 years, and they do a fantastic job. But now we're reaching that point where we have to think about rehabilitation more, and we've got to be careful that we don't cut so much that, as you said, people have nothing to do but sit there and watch TV for their entire term. So I believe in the next 5 years, and I wish I was going to be in the legislature to see it, but in the next 5 years you're going to see those issues that we're succeeding with at the corrections brought down to the county level, and jails are going to have to start upping their game.
But the next 5 years.
And we got a call on the line. Yes, you're on the line with Joe.
Well, I guess I'll contradict that lady because I had a son that was in Ottawa County there, Fillmore, and the conditions were good enough there that he doesn't want to go back. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
Not giving them all the comforts of home and this and that. I have a problem with the vendor they got in there and the pricing of stamps and cards and stuff like that. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous, the profit margin they've got set into that. But it just makes it more expensive for the families on the outside that are trying to help the person on the inside. But the people on the inside, I'm sorry, you did the crime, you got to pay the time, and it shouldn't be a comfort inn.
Yeah.
Well, I've toured enough prisons in my time to know that even with exercise equipment and classrooms and everything else, it's never going to be the comfort inn. But I know what you're saying, sir, and most people, I believe, feel the way you do. that you've got to be careful that it's not a place where you want to go back to.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I hope
God bless. Have a great day.
Thank you,
you bet.
Sir.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. 395-1450, our number. I guess we probably won't have time for another call here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Juke. It's great to be here again.
It's good to have you here, and I'm glad you're making progress on the things you are working on.
Well, we didn't touch on driver responsibility fees, but I'm proud to say that we got that one through, and it's passed, and it's going to be a six-year phase-out, but people can celebrate that eventually that program is going to go away, and the state will not be collecting dollars for those fees.
So wait 6 years before you do anything.
Yeah, okay. Something like that.
Thank you very much for being our guest this morning here on Talk the Town.
Thank you.